And we're holding on page Samach Beis in Beitza or Zayin. Continuing on Halachas of Yom Tov, the Mishnah is talking about, now to a certain extent, you're allowed to buy things from a store on Yom Tov, not using money. Obviously, you're going to buy it on credit, but you have various dinim and ideas, it being for Simchas Yom Tov, because otherwise, if you run out of supplies, then that's going to impinge on your Simchas Yom Tov. But there are different rules, so you don't come to do malachos, and so that you don't, so it's not urdim de choil, etc. So the Mishnah says, Omer Adam Lachenveni, a person can say to a storekeeper, Mali li klizeh, fill up this keli for me. Meaning, and after Yom Tov, we'll figure out how much it holds, and then we'll work out how much I owe you. Avaloi b'midah, but not if it's a measurement keli. So not if it's a keli, for example, that avaloi b'midah actually means rather that he can't tell him, for example, fill me up a gallon of wine. So you can't mention an actual measurement. And Rabbi Yehuda says, not only that, if it's a keli that's known to have a certain midah, for example, a container that's known to hold a gallon, then also, lo yimalenu, you can't fill it up completely because then you have the same problem. You know, even without mentioning that it's a gallon, you know that that's what it is. The Mishnah continues, and the Ramaphoshim will explain that this is actually a continuation of Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Maisa ba'abashol ben botnis. It happened with Abashol ben botnis, who lived in Yerushalayim before the Churban. As the Gemara is going to tell us, he was a storekeeper over there. He would fill up his containers, his measured containers, with wine before Yom Tov, and then he would give them out to customers on Yom Tov. The idea being, in other words, that since he can't measure it out on Yom Tov, so he would have it pre-measured out before Yom Tov, and then on Yom Tov itself, all he has to do is give it to the customers. Abba Shol says, now Abba Shol is not the same as Abba Shol ben Botnis, he may be a descendant of his, though, I don't know. In any case, Abba Shol says, Afba Moyed, Hoya Oysa Kain, he also used to do that on Chol HaMoyed, Mishum Birurei Hamidos. Because of the clarification of the midos, meaning Rashi explains like this. First of all, Rashi says actually Rashi prefers a girsa that doesn't have these words mishum birure hamidos. The Gemara is going to bring a brisa that mentions it, but Rashi himself says it's preferable to say that it's not over here. The point being that since Abba Shol ben Botnis was a Talmud Chacham, and during Chol HaMoed many more people, since people are off work, many people are coming to learn Torah from him. So even during Chol HaMoed, which is a time when people are not learning, he would fill up his barrels and his containers the night before, and that way on Chol HaMoed also during the daytime, all he has to do is hand them to the customers without having to take the time to fill them up then. Then Rashi brings, now there is a girsim of Nebirure Hamidis, and the vote would be that, like this, when you're pouring wine from your container into somebody else's, inevitably it's going to foam up a little bit. And that means you're not giving the person a full measure. So what do you have to do? You have to wait until the foam settles down and make sure that you give them a completely full measure. Abba Shol ben Botnis didn't want to waste time doing Chol HaMoed because of Bittul Beis HaMedrash. He wants to be able to spend as much possible time learning and teaching in the Beis HaMedrash. So he doesn't want, on the other hand, he doesn't want to give an underweight amount. So therefore he would fill up the containers the night before, and that way there's no foaming, and that way there's no problem. That way he doesn't have to wait around. He can just give the already filled container to the customer on Chol HaMoed. So Birur Amidus would be to make sure that the exact amount, right, and that there's no foaming. The Chum say he would do that actually on weekdays as well. Because of Mitzri Hamidos, which is when he was selling oil. Now, apparently he sold both wine and oil. Oil is a lot thicker than wine. When you pour it from one container into another, then, if you don't let it sit, if you don't let the top container sit there suspended for a long time, you're going to have some oil left in your container, which by rights should have gone to the customer. Now, Me'ikra Din, as the Gemara is going to say, you don't have to worry about it. People are usually moichel on that small amount. Nevertheless, he wanted to be extra careful. So, named Mitzri Amidis, in order to make sure, like this, a customer comes and says, I want to buy a lug of oil. And if you go pour him the lug at that point, he's not going to necessarily get a full lug because some of it will stick to the top container. So, therefore, he would do it from the night before. Even on weekdays, the Chum say, and that way, the smats in Mitzri Amidis, it would drain out the whole night. And that way, there's next to nothing left that didn't go to the customer as it should. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Akba Moyed Oisekain, when we're saying that according to the Chacham, according to Abba Shol, that Abba Shol ben Botnis would do this also on Chol Moyed. And so now, again, Rashi has two possible Gersos. One that it says, Mitne Virure Amidus, and the other one that it doesn't say anything at all. It just says he would do it on Chol Moyed. So the Gemara spells, the Braisa spells out, Akba Moyed Oisekain, Mitne Bitol Beisamedrish, in order to not waste time from learning. And again, according to two explanations of Rashi, either it means, in other words, that he didn't want to waste time making sure that after it foams to take the time to fill up the rest of the way, so therefore he does it the night before when they're anyway not in the Beis Medrash, or it means that he would fill up the containers so that he doesn't have to take time during the day on Chol Hamoed Bechlal to fill them up, where like this he'd rather be in the Beis Medrash learning Torah. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Hu kines shin garbe yayin min birure hamidus. Eventually, over time, still, even with all of that, these birure hamidus still added up. There's always going to be a little bit that sticks to the container. There's also going to be an explanation that Tosfos Reed makes a point. Usually we're saying he would fill up the containers the night before, but sometimes on a day of Yom Tov or a day of Chol Hamoed, he'd run out of pre-filled containers. So then he needs to fill them on the spot. The problem is now then you're going to have this issue with the foaming. The thing is, people are not usually going to want to wait around to wait for that for the foam to settle and to fill up with that extra ounce or two. They'll just be mouth on it. So over time, these extra amounts collected until he had 300 barrels of wine from these birure hamidus. V'chaveroi, and a colleague of his who was also a storekeeper there in Yerushalayim, here the Braisa, the way the Gemara brings it over here, doesn't identify him. The Tesefta and the Yerushalmi, when it brings the Tesefta, identifies him as Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok. Anyway, Kines Shin Garbi Shemen min Mitzvah Amidus. He collected 300 barrels of oil from the Mitzvah Amidus, from these little bits that stick to the container that didn't drain out. So again, even though he's putting it up and suspending it there all night, inevitably some of it sticks to the inside of the container because oil is very viscous, much more so than wine, and therefore over time that collected up. So eventually, once they had all those hundreds of barrels, they brought it to the Gizborim of the Beis Mikdash because they don't want to have enough. I mean, after all, they take the view it's not really theirs. So they want to use it. So they want to use it for Hekdash. Now, they themselves are not Makdash, Rashi points out, because they figured it's not ours. It's not ours, Bechlal. It belongs to the customers. Or either way, it would be Gezel. You can't bring Hekdash out of Gezel. So they're bringing it to the Gizborim, basically to ask, you can use them for Hekdash if you want, but we're not going to actually be Makdash then. Amrulahem, the Gizborim said, Einach Biskukim Makach, you don't need to do that. The fact is, there's no intent to be Gezel over here. The customers are Moichel, because they're in a hurry, and they're in a hurry. They don't want to wait around until every last drop gets out, or until the foam settles and when you refill it, and they know that a little bit is going to stick to the container. You're allowed to keep it. It's a thing of Mechila. But Abishol ben Botnis and Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok said, "Af onu ein ritzin ein b'kach." The fact is, we don't want to have hana from what belongs to other people. True that technically it could say it belongs to us based on the fact that people were mochel, but we don't want to. Now, Marshall also points out in that case why they bring it to the Gizborim. How does that help? Fine, they're not going to be machdish it, but still, won't there be a problem that Hekdish is using Gezel? So Marashah explains, because based on what the Gemara explains in Baba Kama, which is currently in Daf Yomi, then you're going to have this Yush and this Shinu Deshus. There's Yush because the original owners certainly gave up hope. They have no intention of coming back for those few drops. And there's Shinu Deshus because they're giving it to the Gizborim. And that's enough for it to be considered that now it's not Gezel anymore. That now, in principle, if it was going to be reimbursed at this point, you wouldn't have to give them back the actual wine or oil anymore. Just the value of it, the object itself, now is nikna, and therefore there's no problem of getting. So they're still saying, ein ritzin ein b'kach, we don't want that. Omrulahem. So the Gizborim told them, or Rashi actually says the Chachamim. So actually, that Rashi says the Omru Lahem is actually the Chachamim. So they brought them to the Gizborim, but the Gizborim are not necessarily the ones who are going to be passing halacha on such things. So the Chachamim, who were there also in the Beis Mikdash and Melishkas Hagazis or wherever, were the ones who told them you don't need to, and they're saying nevertheless we want to. So Omru Lahem, the Chachamim are telling them, Hoyovach Marta Malatzmachem, well, since you're Machmer on yourselves, and you don't want it, then fine, don't make it hektish. Instead, go and use them for the needs of the rabbi. Go, as the Gemara will explain in another line, what that is. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Gozal ve'inyadem yimi gozal. If a person stole and he doesn't know exactly who he stole from, an example of that would be, let's say, for example, a person has dishonest weights and measures. He has no way of knowing who were all the customers that bought from him over all the years. So again, in this case, it's not technically gezel, but if you want to treat it as though it was gezel, then fine, do that. Yelech b'yasim and tzorchei rabim, go use them for public needs. Mayhi, what kind of public needs are we talking about? Use them to dig various kinds of water pits that people need for a water supply. The Gemara actually brings from the Gemara in Bava Kamma that the difference between Boris, Shichin, and Maris, Boris are round, Shichin are square or rectangular, Maris have a, like a Maora, a cave, they have a natural roof over them, but in any case, they're all various kinds of water pits in which where people use for their drinking water and for water for their other needs, so that'll be Tzolchei Rabin. The point being, in other words, that way, the people to whom this wine and oil originally belong will eventually end up benefiting from it as well. And Maharsha points out, still, the reason why they were machmir is because the buyers, the customers, hadn't the fedush said were moichel. If they had the fedush said were moichel, then fine, they wouldn't have a problem with that. But because they didn't, they still considered there to be a trace of gezel. The Yerushalmi, by the way, when it brings this story, mentions an interesting point about this Abba Shol ben Buttons. So it's saying that at one point his arm was hurting him, and he's lying in bed for it to recover, and the other Chachamim came to visit them, and he said, take a look at this arm that all these years I used it to measure so honestly, as we're saying over here, and now I'm suffering with it. So that it's an example of how strictly the Eibishter judges tzaddikim, that even though he's taking every possible step to avoid even a trace of gezel, nevertheless, the Eibishter still, when he's giving him yisurim, it's going to be dafka with that arm. Next, this is an earlier piece of the Gemara and the Perek. The Mishnah is talking about, suppose that a goy brings you something on Yom Tov where there's a concern that there may have been a malacha, for example, a fish that he caught, or something he might have brought from outside the tomb or whatever. So what are the dinim about it? So the Mishnah mentions that one time a goy brought some fish to Rav Gamliel, and he said, it's mutter, but I don't want to accept it from him because Rashi says I don't like the guy. So, but as far as the din is concerned, Rav Gamliel holds it's mutter. So the Gemara gets into a discussion, what does it mean exactly that it's mutter? And it brings a machlokas of Rav and Levi, whether it means that it's does it mean that it's mutter to handle as well as to eat, or does it mean that it's only mutter to handle but not to eat? So Rav holds you can handle it. It's not mukta, but you can't eat it until after Yom Tov. Levi holds that you could even eat it. Achronim deal with the question, if you can't eat it, how are you allowed to handle it? Wouldn't it be mukta on those grounds alone? And there's a lot of discussion about that. The Marshal talks about it over here on Beitza, and the Magen Avraham points out, disagrees with the Marshal and says, in fact, if it is anything that's also to eat is also to handle, and the Noda Behuda and the Chassam Sofer talk about it and give various reasons why it should be mutter. One thing being that it may only be a problem of it having been brought from outside the tchum, and every person has their own individual tchum, so conceivably for somebody else who had a different tchum, it would be mutter, and they go and discuss. There's a lot of lumbus about it. In any case, Omer Rav, lo'olam al yimna odam atzmi v'esemedrash afu the shah achas. A person should never hold himself back from being in the Beis Medrash for even one moment. The person should always make sure, as much as possible, to be in the Beis Medrash all the time. I'll tell you why, because here you have this machlokas between Levi and me. Well, one time Levi and I were talmidim in front of Rebbe. Now in the evening, when Rebbe was telling over this discussion, when he was teaching this Mishnah and the discussion about it, what Rav Gamliel meant by mutarim. So in the evening he said mutarim alma mutarim ba'achila. He said it's mutu even to eat the fish. But Safra, the next morning, when Rebbe taught this again, Oma Mutarin Lakabel, he says it's only Mutter to receive it. You're allowed to handle it, it's not Mutter, but you can't eat it. Well, says Rav. Now, so Rebbe changed his mind. In other words, so Rav says, "Anod ha'voy be medrasha." I was in the Beis Medrash in the morning, so I heard both statements of Rebbe, the original statement and when Rebbe changed his mind, had Rebbe, and therefore I changed my mind as well, and I followed Rebbe's second lashon. Levi, do I have a Beis Medrash? Shall I hold it? Levi was not in the Beis Medrash. So he didn't change his mind, and therefore, in other words, Rav is saying, had Levi been there, then we wouldn't have this machlokas, and we would both agree that it means motor in lekabel, but not motor in lechem. Now, of course, you have to ask then, what is Levi thinking when the other talmidim tell him that Rebbe changed his mind? So you could say, and I've seen this answered someplace, that Levi would say, you know what, Rebbe changed his mind. And if I had been there, I would have shown him with logical proofs that the way he said it originally was more correct, and therefore I'm not obligated to change my mind just because Rebbe did, because maybe there's another svara that Rebbe wasn't thinking of. On the other hand, Rav is taking the view, fakir, Levi, if you had been in the Beis Medrash, you would have found that Rebbe is giving such solid proofs for what he's saying now, that you would have had to agree that that's how it is. The point is, though, that the machlokas ends up because, in fact, that's not how it was, and therefore Rav is stressing, you see from that, the importance of always being in the Beis Medrash. Ben Yehoyada points out on this when he says, Afilo Shah Achas means, for example, even Yomtev. Even, you'd think, Yomtev, busy with your family, and your Achilo Shia, and Simchas Yomtev, and all that. Nevertheless, a person should make an effort as much as possible to be in the Beis Medrash even then. What? Chetzil Hashem, but even outside of Chetzil Hashem, yeah. Hamevi kade yayin perek ruvi. So the perek talks about various activities that you're allowed and not allowed to do on Yom Tov from the point of view of uvdin dechoil, that you're doing things that are weekdayish activities or that they're actual malachas which are not close enough to oichel nefesh to be mutter on Yom Tov. For example, making a fire. So the Gemara brings in that connection a couple of dinim by Rav Nosson va'Abba Omer Rav. So now the Gemara brings a couple of statements of agadah from him. Omer Rav Nosson ba'Abba, Omer Rav, Asirei Bavel Yodei Gehenim. The rich people of Bavel are destined to go down to Gehenim, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, they were not Balei Tzedakah, they were stingy. Kihod Shabsai Ba'Merinus Ikal Bavel. We have the example that Shabsai Ba'Merinus one time, and Marashah points out, the fact is, the Rachmanus Tzedakah helps save a person from Dina Shel Gehenim, as the Gemara says in Bava Basra. So if these guys are not Balei Tzedakah, then they're winding up in Gehenim. We have the example where Shabsai Bamarinus came to visit Bavel. And by the way, it doesn't have to be necessarily that we mean Bavel as in the country. There's a country of Bavel. There's also a city of Bavel. So the original city of Bavel was Nebuchadnezzar's capital, and afterwards it was destroyed. There's a number of Nevi'im that give Nevuah how it's going to be destroyed and never resettled. Even now, the place is a heap of ruins where they found all kinds of interesting archaeological digs. But there was a town nearby that took the name Bavel, and for hundreds of years, Jews lived there. So it's very possible that what Rav Nosson ba'Abba is saying is not about the rich people of Bavel, the country as a whole. It's a shocking thing to say that all of them are stingy and they're all Yod Gehenim. He may be referring specifically to the ones in the city of Bavel. Anyway, so this Shabsai Bamarinus came to Bavel. Bo minayu iska. He asked them, can they join with him in an iska? Which is, they'll give him some merchandise and he'll go and sell it and they'll split the profits. Which, by the way, in Shloisha Perakim of Rambam currently, where we're learning about Hilchos Ribis, there's some about that. Well, actually, the details about Iska actually are in a different place, though, in Hilchos Shulchan B'Shutbin. Now it's talking about Ribis as far as other angles. But anyway, there are potential issues of Ribis involved, and therefore it has to be structured in a certain way, which is where you have the whole concept of a Heter Iska. Anyway, he wanted them to be willing to go to do an Iska with him where he can make a profit that way. Lo yavu le, and nobody wanted to do that. Mezoni, he asked them for food. Mezanami lo zanuhu, and they didn't give him food either. Omar, so the Shabsai by Marina says, Hani me'er of Rav pasu. These guys must be descended from the heir of Rav. They can't possibly be descended from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, v'nosam l'chor rachnim v'richamcha. Hashem will give you rachmim, and he will have rachmanas on you. Which means, in other words, that rachmim, Hashem will give you the ability to have rachmanas on other people, and v'richamcha, and Hashem in turn will have rachmanas on you. And as Rashi points out, the pasuk continues, kashem nishba l'avosecha, as Hashem swore to your fathers. So therefore, it means when a person has that characteristic, then we know that he's descended from the avos. When not, then not. Marsha points out specifically, as the Gemara is going to so call him a racham al abrius, the yedush umizarish al Avraham Avinu. Anybody who has rachmanos on other people, then you know that he's from the descendants of Avraham Avinu. And specifically Avraham, Marsha says, because after all, by him it says explicitly about the tzedakah that he gave. He adopted lamanashay tzaves bonaves beis achrav lasa tzedakah mishpat. So we see that Avraham excelled in that. So a person who does that, then we know that he's from the descendants of Avraham. And a person does not have that rachmanos, then you can be sure he's not from the descendants of Avraham Avinu, and he's descended from the Eir of Ra. It is a concept. The context is talking about destroying an irani dachas, where the pasuk is saying, even though Mefarshim explained that the pasuk is saying, even though it's normally a cruel thing to do to wipe out an entire city, but Hashem promises that He will give you the quality of rachmim as a result of that. But still, the way it phrases it, the nasa macharachmim v'richamcha, also suggests that Hashem is going to give you the ability to have rachmim, and in turn Hashem will have rachmanos on you. Kashenishba l'avosecha, as he swore to your fathers, and therefore that being rachmanim is one of the natural traits of a yid, as we know that Jews are bashanim rachmanim and goyim lachsadim. So if somebody is not, then we know that he's not. Marsha brings in this connection a drosha on the pasuk. We say in davening, we say in vanachnu leneda. We have the expression mahir yekadmur rachamecho ki daloyne ma'od. Hashem yirachmim should come ahead of us because we are very poor. Because what is this pasuk saying? When benosim lachar rachmim, Hashem will give you the ability to have rachmanos, and you will then have rachmanos. And when you show that rachmanos, v'richamcha, then Hashem in turn will show rachmim to you. Meaning, when you give tzedakah, then Hashem will do tzedakah for you. Well, now we're saying, ki daloyne ma'od, we're very poor, we can't afford to give tzedakah. So Hashem, you have to take the initiative, you have to, mahir yekadmunu rachamecha, your rachman should come ahead before we even do, in order that we should have the opportunity to give tzedakah and have the ability to be merachem on them. So therefore, say, v'omer ab nasin v'aba omer rab. When a person is waiting for some, looking forward to somebody else's table, in other words, that he's not able to support himself and he has to depend on somebody else to give him food, the world is dark in front of him. Rashi says, like there's darkness spread out in front of him. Everything appears to him to be dark. As the pasuk says, noded hula lechem aye. A person is wandering around for bread. Where is the? He doesn't know where there's bread. Yoda, he knows ki nochen be yoda yom choshech, that there is prepared for him, that there's already prepared in his hand, that he's already experiencing yom choshech, a day of darkness. So when he's wandering around and he has to depend on other people to give him tzedakah, then it means that he's having a dark life. Marsha explains the connection is we learned in Yuma that we have that the you can't compare with the Gemara had said over there when a person can't see what he's eating, then he doesn't enjoy it as much as when he could see it, which is why we talked about over there why Hashem gave the mon by day so they'd be able to see it. So like this, a person is metzakel shulchan acherim, it's like he can't see the food and therefore he the world is dark. Eitz Yosef brings over here a point that actually the vote is, now you can have a person who's invited to somebody else to eat by somebody else, there can be two ways about it. There can be the other guy takes the initiative and invites him because it'll be an honor for me to have you as a guest. Versus the other way around, where the person himself has to go asking around for people to eat by. So the first kind is not what Rav Chista is not what Rav Nosson Ba'aba is talking about, because then it's being done for his covered. We're talking about the second one where he's hoping that somebody else will take the initiative to invite him, and then they don't, and he has to go and ask them. So that's Olam Choshech Ba'aba. And of course, the hurrah from that is to make sure that don't put a person in that situation and make sure that you proactively invite him. Rav Chista Amar, Chayim, Enam Chayim, Rav Chista says such a person, his life is not even really a life. And Maharshal says he's getting that also from the same pasuk, since it says that Yom Choshech, the ultimate Yom Choshech, is when a person passes away. So therefore, we're talking about a person like that. Not only the world is dark for him, but it's as if his life is not that such a life is not a life.
Definitely, you can find him later on. He had a booster at that point. It's not going to be removed.
No, but at least for the future, you try to make sure to realize it and to invite him proactively. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan, Gimel Chayeyim Enim Chayim. There are three types of people whose life is not a life. The Elohim, and they are, first of all, Hametzapa L'Shulchan Chaveiro, somebody who's looking forward to be inviting to somebody else, like Rav Chista just said. And the second one, Misha Ishtei Meshelas Olav, a person, a man whose wife dominates him, and makes life difficult for him. Marshal brings in this connection a posit from Kehelas that's darshan in Masechta Yevamos that talks about that umoitzani mami mavas is a isha, that sometimes a not so good relationship between husband and wife can be the most difficult thing. Iyun Yaakov brings a gilsa mish ishti mishka mekalaltoi, where his wife curses him. Same idea, in other words. And the third one, Mish Yisurin, Moshe Migufay, a person who Yisurin dominate his body. Meaning, what do you mean? Why don't you say Baal Yisurin? Maharsha points out, now you have, for example, you can have a person who he controls his Yisurin. The example be the ultimate example of that being the Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon in the story, the Gemara in Baba Metzia tells a long story about how he asked for Yisurin to come on him to clean up certain things that he felt he hadn't acted quite rightly. And then, but he would, every morning he would tell the Yisurim to go away so he can go to the Beis Medrash and learn Torah, and every evening he would tell the Yisurim to come back because then he's not in the Beis Medrash anyhow. So that's, he's Moshe on the Yisurim. Here we're talking about the other way around. The Yisurim are Moshe on him, and that's a very difficult thing, and that's Chayav Enim Chayim. Maharsha points out, when you get down to it, you have three, not Maharsha, Maral points out, you have over here something with his goof, with his relationships and with his money, his goof the yisurim, his relationships, his wife and his money, the matzap of the shulchan achirim, where he can't support himself. The yesh oimim af misha in lecholok echad. Some say also somebody who has only one shirt, he can never wash it, so therefore he ends up suffering from lice. The Tanakama, what does the Tanakama answer back to that? He says, that's not such a big deal. Amayla Choshevlo, why doesn't he count that? Because Efshur D'Mayim B'Money, there's an alternative. If he's not able to wash it, because he always needs it to wear, he can always in private take it off and pick out the lice from it, so therefore it's not so bad. Now, the Yeshomim are going to say, fine, you're not going to catch every single louse, but therefore the Tanakama says it's not quite so bad. I don't know, really, actually. The truth is, there's a Gemara in Moed Katan that talks about a situation in connection with the halachas of Chalamoyed, where a person has only one choluk, where he's allowed to launder it during Chalamoyed, and meanwhile he wears like his overcoat and then puts it on and keeps it on with a belt. I don't know why the Gemara doesn't mention that point over here, unless we're talking about a person who has a choluk echad and no coat, so then he's really stuck. He has no way to wash it, because what's he going to do if he goes to the river or whatever? He has to be wearing something while he's doing that. Nobody can lend him anything either. Could be, yeah. Mashuvin Perek Hamishi. So this Perek continues talking about various things that you're allowed and not allowed to do on Yom Tov involving Tircha Yisera. The first thing it talks about is you have a case where a person has fruit or produce out drying on top of his roof. Roofs back then in Eretz Yisrael were flat, like you have here in Crown Heights. You have some such roofs as well in Eretz Yisrael, and now it's much more common, and people would regularly use their roofs for all kinds of purposes, including drying produce. So you have a situation where a person has his produce drying on his roof, and it comes and on Yom Tov there's a rainstorm about to come, and therefore it's going to get ruined. So the Mishnah describes that he's allowed to drop it through a skylight into the house. He's not allowed to carry it downstairs because that would be Tircha Yisera, but he's allowed to drop it. The Chacham allowed him to drop it through the skylight. The word for that is Mashilin, and the Gemara mentions that there were actually a bunch of different versions among the Amoraim of what that word is. Is it Mashilin, Mashilin, Mashirin, Manshirin, etc.? There's like five different versions of what the word was. And the Gemara points out each of them is actually correct because each of those is a word. In Lashon Kodesh, that means to make something drop. And an example is when you have one girsa was mashirin with a resh instead of a lamed. So you have an example. Rabbi Shtnan, we learn in a Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, nazir lo yochof roshe ba'adama. A nazir should not rub or shampoo his hair with earth, with some kind of earth or clay or whatever that they would use back then for cleaning hair, because it may cause hair to fall out, and another, after all, is not allowed to cut his hair. So we see that the word mashir means to make things fall, and therefore the Mishnah can be using the word mashirin to mean making the fruit fall. Okay. A few blocks later, it talks about, now the most of the end of the parak talks about dinim, about tchumen. Now you have tchumen both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, but in terms of the dinim that it talks about there, it's not really as relevant on Shabbos, because on Shabbos you can't carry anything. But on Yom Tov, when you can carry, you have the whole, the tchum becomes a much more important point, because not only a person has a tchum, but also the objects that belong to him share his tchum. So if we have, for example, at the beginning of Yom Tov, I have a kol, to give the example that the Gemara is going to bring over here, then on Yom Tov itself, that kol can only go as far as I myself can go on Yom Tov. If somebody else wants to borrow that kol from me, and they have a different tchum that overlaps with mine, they can't take it outside of my tchum. So the Mishnah talks about that, and then the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hei Dvarim Nemru B'Gachelz. There are five dinim that apply as far as a kol versus the flame. Number one, Hagachelis Kiragli Abayla Mishal Heves V'chol Makim. The first one is what we just said about a coal, that it has to stick to the tchum, it has to be kept within the tchum of the owner himself. It can't go out of that. But on the other hand, the flame could go anywhere. If you come and light a candle using my flame, then you're allowed to take that candle anywhere within your tchum, even though that flame is going outside of my tchum, because the flame has no mamashus, and therefore you can't say that should be limited by a tchum. The second thing, gachelas shel hekdesh moilinba, a coal that belongs to hekdesh, if a person misuses it, then if a person uses it for his own purposes, then he's chayiv from me'ila. The shel heves, but on the other hand, if he takes a flame from hekdesh, loinen v'loy moilin, he's not allowed to have that hana, but the dirabanan, but he's not over on me'ila daraisa, because daraisa, there'd be no issue with it, and only the chachamim asked it for reasons that the Gemara talks about. The third one, gachelas shel avodis kachavim, mazalis, asura, a call of avodis zara, asura, is also like anything else of avodis zara, lo yidbak v'yarcham umam in acherem, v'shal heves muteres, but the flame would be mutter. If you light a flame from a candle or whatever that's burning for avodis zara, then that would be mutter. The truth is, that's not universally agreed to. There are achronim that talk about, the prima godim, I think, talks about, that if you light directly from the avodah zarah flame, your taka would be also to have anah from that flame. But if you light another one from that one, then that would be mutter. So the point is, again, because the coal is something substantial, and the flame does not have a substance there. The fourth one, hamotzi gachelos lo shoser avim chayiv. If a person on Shabbos carries out a coal outdoors, he's going to be chayiv. V'shal heves potter. But if he carries out a flame on Shabbos, he's going to be potter. And the Gemara goes and discusses a couple of possible cases, how he could carry a flame. How do you carry a flame by itself without it being attached to something? So the Gemara brings a couple of possibilities. It might be, for example, that you have a tiny twig of wood, not enough to be chayiv for carrying the wood itself. And you have a flame on it, you can have a case where a person like blew on a flame and caused a little bit of the flame to detach and go out into Rosh Hashanah, and the Gemara brings a couple of possibilities. And the fifth one, Hamudah Hanah Mechadera, if a person makes a neder not to have Hanah from somebody else, also B'Gachalte, then he's not allowed to use a coal from the other person, or Mutter B'Shal Havdoi, but he would be Mutter to use a flame from him, because again, because the flame has no substance, and therefore that can't be considered something that he's having Hanah. Beni Hayada points out that these five things are actually being listed in order of the greater chiddush. The first one is Yom Tov. The second one, but you would think maybe Hekdesh is more severe, and nevertheless we're saying that the flame of Hekdesh, at least Daraisa, there's no issue of Me'ila with it. Then you would think Avodah Zarah is still more severe, because it's completely awesome Ana. Nevertheless, the flame is Mutter. Then Shabbos even more so, because Shabbos is an Issu Skila, and nevertheless, moving the flame from Rosh Hashanah Yochid to Rosh Hashanah Abib is not Chayiv Skila. And the fifth one that you would think, there's still some kind of Hana over here, and we're saying that's not considered a Hana. So there, that's why it lists them in that order, he says. The last Mishnah mentions that you're allowed to water and shecht Bisius, but not Midborius. Bisius being animals that are to a certain extent domesticated, and Midborius are ones that are always out in the Midbar, as the Gemara is now going to define. The Gemara, by the way, deals with the question why it has to mention mashkin v'shoichten, why does it mention you give them a drink, and it explains because giving them a drink first helps mishum sircha, because it helps pull apart things that otherwise would be stuck together. There are two major explanations about that. One is makes the skin easier to strip off, and another is that it prevents that it gets rid of sirchas on the lungs. And there's quite a number of sirchas where they'd ever talk about the deeper idea behind all of that. The water represents Torah, and it means that Torah gives a person the ability that everything in his body, including the lungs, should function properly, begashmius and beruchnius, and it makes it easier to separate the flesh, which represents what becomes part of a person, is pnimius, from the skin, which remains bechitzonius, and there's several different sichas and rishimis where they never talked about different angles on that, about the importance of the mashkin before you shecht. Anyway, here the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Elohein midborius ve'elohein baisius. What's the definition of midborius versus baisius? Midborius, the midbar animals, are kol sheyotzes for Pesach, when they leave the town, Pesach time, when it's the springtime, v'royas ba'afer, and they go out and graze in the meadows, v'nichnosis v'revir rishona, and when do they come back? When the first rains start falling, which is Cheshvan time. So the whole, from Pesach until Cheshvan, they're out in the wild over there and they never bother returning home because they forage for themselves. Then when cooler, rainy weather is coming, then they come back to their owner and he keeps them in his barn over the winter. Those would be the Baisius. So those would be the Midborius. And the Mishnah is saying you can't shech them on Yom Tov, basically because of Mokta. The Elohim Baisius, the fully domesticated ones, are kosher yotzes v'royetz chutz l'tchum, where they go every day and they graze outside the tchum, ovois v'lonis v'secha tchum, and then they come and sleep overnight in the tchum. So every night they come home, or at least they come into the town. Those are the Baisius, and those are considered muchan. Those are, you had them in mind before Yom Tov, and therefore you're allowed to shech them on Yom Tov. Rebbe says no. Both of those kinds are considered Baisius. The fact that they return home for part of the year still is enough for them to be considered Baisius, and therefore that you would be allowed to take them and shech them on Yom Tov. Elohim Midborius. Rather, the definition of the Midborius would be, says Rebbe, kosher yotzis v'royis ba'afer, when they go out and graze in the meadows, v'ein nechnosin l'yishuv, loy b'moisach hamav, loy b'moisach shomim, they never return into the city, neither during the summer nor during the winter, so then those are called Midborius. Actually, the Gemara points out that Rebbe himself said to the Chachamim, myself, I hold of a very narrow conception of Muktzah. Throughout the Masechta and also in various places in Shabbos, the Gemara discusses that there's a basic machlokas about the scope of the concept of Muktzah, where Rav Shimon in general holds that it's a very narrow scope, and Rav Yehuda says it's much broader. The Gemara actually mentioned at the beginning of Beitza that on Shabbos we hold like Rav Shimon, but on Yom Tov we hold like Rav Yehuda, because since Yom Tov you're allowed to do various malachas, the Chachamim are concerned that you may get careless with the Kedusha of Yom Tov, and therefore they impose a stronger kind of Muktzah. So therefore, for example, Noilad is more also on Yom Tov than it is on Shabbos, and there's other examples. So now, Rebbe is saying, he holds like Reb Shimon, and says, I don't hold of this broad conception of Muktzah at all, so as far as I'm concerned, there's no difference between Baisius and Midborius. But you, Chachamim, you're making that distinction, at least you should hold that when the animals come home during the winter, then they should be considered Baisius, and the Chachamim say, no, we still consider those Midborius. There's a Sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind that. So these different kinds of animals that you could or couldn't shecht represents the different kinds of Jews that you can have an effect on, that you can, after all, shchita is in the shochat alo moshach, you're drawing them close to Kedusha. So you have the machloka, so you have the distinction, what kind? The Chachamim are saying, when you have the ones, Mela, they're out, and they seem to have no connection with Hashem during the daytime, meaning when things are good, but at least when it's nighttime, meaning when they see that times are getting difficult, then they come back to Hashem, good, then they're Baisius, then they're available for you all the time to go and bring them close to the Ebeshter. But when they're Midborius, when even during the night they can't be bothered coming, only maybe some seasons of the year, then the Chachamim are saying, no, they're mechutz l'tchum. They're out of the picture, and you can't go and have any ashpah on them. You certainly can't, for example, go on Yom Tov outside, maybe on weekdays you could, but at least when the Torah says it's aser to actually go out of the tchum, meaning to go out of your place, out of your gedder, and work with such Jews, you can't do that. Whereas Rebbe says, myself, I don't hold a muktzah at all. I don't hold that any Jew is beyond the pale. Because Rebbe, after all, is the nasi of the Jewish people. But he's saying, even you chachamim should at least agree that that there's a broader conception of baisius than you are. And now the halacha in the end is like a chachamim, but nevertheless, the hurrah is that that Rebbe being the nasi, you know that Rebbe goes on to say it, but there are those who are makusher to the nasi, understand that when it comes to working with another yid, you follow Rebbe's position, and you don't say that any yid is midborious and he's out of the picture and there's no hope for him. No matter what, you go and you bring him and you moshech and you draw him into Elikos. Hadron alach masakta beta. Yom yom mashiach ha-go'ola, Dalet Adar Aleph. The Rebbe talks about that the appointment of David Malka Mashiach already took place in the past, as the Pasuk says, Matsasi David Abdi B'Shem and Kodesh Mashachiv, and what was needed was that the people had to accept his rulership, and that there had to be that connection between the people, between the king and the people, with a Shleimus HaGilui. In fact, this has implications in Halacha. The Gemara mentions in Megillah that when David is going to fight against Novel, where Novel had insulted him and called him names and everything, and David is going to consider him Mord B'Malchus and go attack him, so Abigail comes and she explains to David, it's true, you've already been Nimshach as king, but Lord Yosef Tivacha Ba'olam, your coinage is not yet accepted by the people, meaning they don't consider you the actual legitimate king, Shol still the king. So we see that even though David had already been anointed by Hashem, by the Navi, acting in Hashem's name, nevertheless, he's not fully the king until the people accepted him as such. So therefore, so the Rebbe talks about the same thing with Mashiach Tzidkenu. He is the shliach of where Moshe says to Hashem, shlach naviyad tishlach, instead of sending me to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, send the one who you're going to send in the end, meaning Mashiach. In other words, why go through the whole thing? You're going to have to send me for Yitzias Mitzrayim, and there's yet going to be other goals, and just send Mashiach now. So that refers to, the Rebbe is saying, this refers to the Friedrich Rebbe, and al derech zeh, you have the hemshech of his mamala mokim. This is one of the rare places where the Rebbe talked about himself in a sicha. But, so therefore, so we understand, in other words, he's already been appointed, and now we have to accept that. And we have to be mamshech that acceptance on ourselves. Okay. Continuing with dinim of master. When you have a cotton who's old enough for chinuch and he knows how to pronounce everything correctly, he could have master on Shabbos and Yom Tov, with the exception of Parshas Zohar and Parshas Parah. The Alter Rebbe holds actually that he could even be called up by the Dalet Parshias, although the Minhag is not to, and Shabbos Shuv. Actually, the Lubavitcher Minhag is not really to call up a cotton never, but when they do, the Alter Rebbe holds that you could do it on all the four Parshias. Also, a cotton shouldn't be called up Shabbos Shuv. Also, Shvi Shal Pesach because of the Shira. The minhag is not to call up a cotton, and also the first day Shavuos, because then the Haftorah is about the Merkava. So that one, Davka, the minhag is to call the God of a Chacham. Usually we call the Rav for that. Same thing, Shabbos Chazon, you also have the minhag to call up the Rav for Machter to that.